Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. Well, I hope you enjoyed the Sturgeon Moon this week. She sure has been bright. A super blue moon, too, as I heard. My cats always seem a little confused when the night is so lit up. The coyotes have been singing about it, too. And I love the way our days are easing away from the high heat of a couple weeks ago. In today's episode of Desert Oracle Radio, produced August 28, 2020, Ken Lane was dealing with oppressive heat, the pandemic, and fires, but he was looking forward to change. Maybe you can relate. Don't forget to be alive a little bit in the course of your safety, he says. Good advice, I think. Well, here we go.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. A little bit of relief at the end of a late summer day. In the year of our peculiar misery, 2020. A few times in recent weeks, I've had to cut my evening walk short because the air was too bad. Getting that hour or so outside at sundown is about the only thing that makes life tolerable in the dumb pandemic and dumb August at the height of monsoon season. Most people who live in the desert by choice simply do not care for perspiring. No, thank you. Here's how to know if there's too much humidity. You need an air conditioner instead of just a good old cheap evaporative cooler, the Swamp Box, temple of cool air on a hot summer day. Watch the people gathered all around it, their heads tilted skyward. Unless it's mounted on the wall, in which case they aren't looking skyward. Anyway, it's a better god than most of them. At least it does something. Some of the time, when conditions are right. Well, how are things in your part of the world? If your part of the world isn't the Mojave High Desert, the Morongo Basin, you know why they call it Morongo? Because that's where the morons go. Get it? That's a joke. Some local humor. Some old dingbat told me that a long time ago. I mean, who would? Who wouldn't like that guy? Well, I just sort of looked off into the distance and said, that's the name of the Morongo band of Mission Indians. Moringa Yam, the Morongo people from the Serrano word for clan. That's what this basin is named for. It's Morongo, Coahuila, and Serrano land. And you should have seen this dingbat turned seven darker shades of wino red. I ran into that guy years later and he saw me from across the room and he just left. Well, good riddance. You want to hear something insane? The last native speakers of what's called Pascahuila, the Morongo people's language, well, the last of them died just a few years ago. But the tribe has put the language together again on computers, spoken and written, so the new generation can learn it, use it in cultural pride. Anyway, it sure is hot and miserable out. And inside for much of the day. If you've only got a swamp cooler, our fickle summer god doesn't work if it's too humid. And you know it's starting to affect my mind. I can't hop over to the bar and sit in the cool, dark air for a couple of rounds before I wander over to the movie theater for a nice air-conditioned matinee. Before maybe meeting up with some people at a nice, indoor, air-conditioned restaurant. I don't want to be a downer about it. But this is all going to be for the long term. How long, who knows, and when it changes, because everything eventually changes. Does it change for the better? Or for, you know, the opposite? As the Arctic Circle forests burn, as the forests of the world burn hotter and longer, as the question of, well, where am I even going to evacuate to, becomes part of our lives for more and more of us, I want to bring something to your attention. Now, the job here at Desert Oracle Radio is primarily the telling of strange folkloric and historic and otherwise interesting tales of our beloved and bizarre and aggressively extreme landscape. Home to many before us, hopefully home to many in the future, not too many, the American Southwest. But the side hustle, as they say over in the HR department, the secret moral mission is to help you appreciate where you are in the world, appreciate the good parts anyway, all the enjoyably weird little things about wherever you are. The local taco shops, the big annual crop everybody goes nuts for once a year. The way the old Circle K's have some heroic ancient saguaro growing up through a hole in the black asphalt and kind of half hanging on. And the beautiful things, especially the desert bighorn coming down in springtime to feast upon all the fresh greens. The arrival of your favorite migrating bird. The first fantastic days of autumn when you can hike in the afternoon again. or a sudden summer thunderstorm with the smell of wet creosote in the air. Standing out in the downpour, even though it's thundering and safety first, etc., or second. Don't forget to be alive a little bit in the course of your safety. God knows there's enough of doing what you're told. We have to be realistic about the times ahead, is what I mean. The climate situation is going to keep getting worse if we don't hit the brakes and get real smart real quick. Look, I have no doubt the climate situation will be fixed by the same species who got us here, humans. I have no doubt that humans will not only get a handle on the catastrophic nightmare caused by our own clumsy use of dirty fuel needed to create this wonderful modern age, but humans will be able to mitigate this kind of stuff. We should have faith in that, because it's a likely possibility. The question is this: does this happen when you're alive or after you're gone? Do we get a handle on the current and future pandemics, a rapid worsening of wildfires and hurricanes and tornadoes and flooding and drought and rapid extinction of insects and plants and animals? And the rapid collapse of an already deeply unfair national economic culture, do we take care of that now, starting now, immediately and steadily over the next several years? Or do we let it get so bad, let it kill off a lot more of us? Let it get so bad that the next generation, or the generation after that, has to fix everything and be satisfied with a much lower bar of success. I've been hearing from people who are all planning the same kind of thing, variations of the same idea. They've got a group of friends or extended family or some combination, and they want to get set up off the grid, out of harm's way, and they want to achieve this by creating a community that will be closed off to the disease-ridden world outside. This is what was happening in the last years of the Western Roman Empire, as it just was not worth it anymore in the cities, especially with the plagues, the pestilence, waves of new diseases like the measles, bubonic plague. The government had more or less crumbled, but it sold itself off to all of its rivals, and then its rivals just subsumed it all, finished off a degenerate and pointless civilization that forgot why it needed to exist. Families were packing up and moving to the country. The wealthy people had villas, vacation houses on the coast or in the mountains by their vineyards, same as the billionaires today. The working class followed them, setting up in small crude factories that served a villa or two. The city had fallen out of favor. Alexandria, the ancient world's biggest city with more than 300,000 people, saw its population drop by 90% in those years. And it dragged on that way for another couple of centuries. And when Napoleon briefly held Alexandria, one in a long line of foreign conquerors going back to its founder, Alexander the Great, well, most of the city was long abandoned. maybe 6,000 people were still hanging around. A lot had happened. Tsunamis, earthquakes, purges, civil war, religious war. And by the time the canal collapsed, the canal that brought fresh Nile water to Alexandria, well, there was nobody left in charge. Nobody to get the workers out there to rebuild that canal. You know it's over when nobody even pretends like they're going to try to fix it. They know. And they sure as hell hope that you don't know. They just want to live out their golden years, their 80s and 90s and 100s, and the kind of easy street life they've always had. They know how bad it's going to get. They know how bad it is now. They caused it. Of course they know. But they've rolled the dice and read the cards, and they are at least semi-confident that they will die of extreme old age and excessive comfort while the old world dies around them. While the old world burns. They know where they're going after all this. It's no wonder they want to drag it out. So how do you manage this sort of thing? A retreat from the pointlessly expensive cities where you can't do anything anymore. I mean, if you're not in that top fraction of the 1%. I don't think I'm giving anything away by telling you some of the ideas that people are kicking around. I've got some friends from the Bay Area who've been looking for an old fishing camp, an abandoned Methodist church camp, that kind of deal. Same on the East Coast, where I've heard remarkably similar schemes from groups of friends and families from New York City and New Jersey and Washington, D.C. and a bunch in North Carolina, where I think some people notice that what's been going on for a couple of years earlier in their own state than a lot of us in the rest of the country. If you are attempting something like this and you have figured it out and you don't mind sharing your knowledge, let me know. You can find me on the social media until it all gets shut down. Now let's talk about another kind of experiment that I want to see if any of you would like to do with me. It's called remote viewing. That's kind of a dumb military contractor name for second sight or dowsing or... the varieties of human psychic experience. Now, some years ago, there was a guy who was into the remote viewing thing up here in the high desert, and he had a bunch of us doing these experiments, and you can just do it on text by phone. The idea is that there's a target. So, say I take an object, a shape, something physical, and I put it somewhere. And that's all you know about it. And then you just kind of think about it and see if any images pop into mind. If they do, if you know about the thing that I've just placed on this tabletop, well, draw a picture of it, make a sketch of it, or just describe it. It's often easier to draw these things because you get the impressions as images in your mind. Images are often more useful than language. So let me know. Let us know in the Desert Oracle Radio Facebook group. You can join that if you like. Or on Twitter, or Instagram, or whatever. Remote viewing, look it up. It's all sort of part of the same question, which is, have you ever been on a spiritual journey? It doesn't have to involve the sacred mushrooms that were likely the first plant humans ever worked to cultivate. It doesn't have to involve LSD or whatever current mystical brew is in fashion, brought back from the old times. It might be set off by a near-death experience or a series of deeply meaningful dream visitations. Intense states of meditation, or sometimes something that just sets you off in broad daylight. A walk in the wilderness, a lazy summer afternoon staring into space, the sound of bees buzzing around a desert willow. You don't know when it's coming. The spotlight from the night sky that zaps you on a lonesome back road. It might even happen in a church, a temple, a mosque, although not too often. Not a lot of religious experiences happen in a church. Not these days. So it goes. But sometimes you see a kid in a library, they were just wandering around waiting for a parent to pick them up, and suddenly they've lost 3 hours, completely engrossed, and the librarian is turning off the lights and locking the restrooms, and this kid does not notice. But if you get there, when you get there, you know it. You know it, and you don't care who believes it or whatever. I mean, who cares if some scold square says, that's just your imagination, or etc. Who cares? You pity the fool. Nothing more to be done about it. Anyway, where you wind up is going to have a lot of variables, but as our old friend Carl Gustav Jung often said, the archetypes are old school. They're entities we associate with the past, classical entities of Egyptian goddesses and other such guardians of the spirit world. They are real, and that's why we keep seeing them. You talk to 100 people who've encountered these guides, these teachers, and the visual and mental impressions are ancient, although they are completely alive and of the moment. They are not in the past, they just are. The I am. And let's forever, the future and the past all together now and always. And the experience will stay with you, alive in the present moment for the rest of your life. As long as you remember it, which you always will. When times are tough, when life is hard and dull, when people just ain't no good, well, it will come back to you and you will receive strength and insight again and again. The insight, in fact, is revealed slowly. You might come out of the zone thinking you understand it all now, it's all so clear, but that's just the ecstasy of contact with the divine. Try to write down what happened, and you'll find haziness in the corners, cobwebs on the words that you form in your mind. It's got to steep for a while, and like a seedling now planted in your psyche, it will grow and develop over time. It's a slow growth initiative, an old growth forest, and every now and then you will get a new revelation. Or make sense of an old one. Hello, Mary Lou. Hello, Miss Pearl. My fleet-footed guides to the underworld. From Amboy to Zyzix and across the great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio, and I am your host, Ken Lane. You know, sometimes people ask me, hey, do you miss playing in bands, being in bands? And I say, no, I don't. I'm in a band with Red, Blue, Black, Silver, and it's called Desert Oracle Radio. We even sold out Pappy and Harriet's a few weeks back, before the show was canceled. Red, Blue, Black, Silver composed and performed all of the soundscapes you heard in tonight's program, right up until our theme song at the end. That one we got from Pierre Langer. We broadcast on Friday nights from KCDZ 107.7 FM in Joshua Tree, 29 Palms, Yucca Valley, and beyond. Oh, and soon you're going to be listening to us on Lookout FM, broadcasting from three radio towers in the Los Angeles metropolitan area, Hollywood, Pacific Palisades for the West Side people, and Burbank. Lookout FM. We have some information about that on our website. How do we do it? How do we do it all? Well, we do it with your support on our Patreon. Patreon.com/Desert Oracle. We much appreciate all of you who contribute. Good night from the voice of the desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGVM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio. Do you remember our shows when I talked about cryptids and the beast, a taxidermied mystery now housed in the Ennis History Museum? Well, I finally made a visit to the place. Here's a little sound tour I recorded there. Thank you. hey, I finally made it to the History Museum in Ennis. And there's a couple volunteers here. And the pictures on the walls, have I seen those in one of the little restaurants downtown Ennis?
Possibly. A lot of people have them.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of our people from this valley. And like I was saying, that these guys are the ones that own the
hardware.
Angle Hardware. And we have the building next door to it that has the forge in it. And so Doc Losey was a very phenomenal doctor in our time. And there also is a room donated to him back there. His surgery where he did, was it the knee?
He did
tennis elbow. He did my husband's. Very good doctor. And we also have a book that's called Doc Losey, and it tells all about his life here in the Madison Valley, getting here. Yep, there you go.
Oh, the one, Doc. I've seen that book before.
Yeah, huh. So it's very interesting. So,
yeah.
But yeah, so the building is, like I was saying, it was the original clinic downtown Ennis. So, and I guess people like it because of the beast, you know, is the big thing. I don't know a lot about the beast, but there's a thing that talks about it.
Let's go look at it.
Yeah, let's go look at it.
Wow. Interesting. It's like leaner than I would have thought. Wow.
Well, I believe like it's 112 or something like that years old.
It's still in good shape.
Hold on. I'm after 121 years.
Uh-huh.
And this was wrote in, when was that wrote? So it's a lot older than that.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, it says on the sign, I'm 135 years old and I'd like to last a few more years. Thank you, the beast. So no flash photos, please. Well, do you have guesses as to what it is?
Most people think it's a wolf.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, how is it different from a wolf, though? For the people that question that. Are the ears the right size? The snout looks really pointed. I wouldn't think that that's wolf. And I did read something that somebody speculated it was either something that escaped from a circus or maybe the offspring.
Well, I don't think like it's a hyena, which would look like it. But what's a wolf? The color is a little dark. It's just, you know, it could genetically be a little bit different than the wolves you see today in Yellowstone.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's quite old.
Mm-hmm.
But,
And it was preying on this guy's
cattle,
yeah. So I wonder if the leanness indicates that it was in poor health to begin with.
Well, that we won't know.
Yeah.
There's a little blurb on it written up.
Uh-huh. What are all the pictures above it of teeth, of the teeth?
Oh, they're just magnets.
They're magnets,
the
okay.
Yeah, that people could buy. you can have this part of them or that part.
They won't bite.
No.
That'd be a cool thing to include in somebody's Christmas stocking.
Right.
Oh, my. The feet of it, did those look like wolf legs to you?
They're really curved. I can't answer that. He doesn't have the hair of a wolf that we see today.
Yeah.
And so back then, wintertime, you know, it just depends, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Is it male or female?
I don't know. Don't know. If you have a camera later, you may want to take a picture of that just to.
I might take a picture of that later,
Because they talk about 1886 is when his father.
Mm-hmm.
First came out, so you know it's something that would be interesting.
It is pretty cool.
Yeah, so that was an Ennis resident. Jack Kirby's grandfather shot it in 1886.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a picture of Jack Kirby right there.
Okay. Turned the Kirby Ranch down by West Fork of the river.
Is it still there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kirby Ranch is still
there. It's called there.
The Kirby Place. The Kirby Place is still there, yes.
Still operational and everything, huh?
I didn't know this. This is very interesting. It says that he killed the strange animal when it appeared on his land a second time and traded the body with an entrepreneur, Joseph Sherwood, for a new cow. He said that Sherwood was a taxidermy, so
Obviously, okay. He mounted the animal and put it on display. It used to start the Storr Museum at Henry's Lake in Idaho. His taxidermy collection was later given to the Idaho Museum of Natural History, where it was kept in storage. And I'm sure we probably got it because it happened in our valley.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
The tail looks interesting, but I don't know if that's just what happens to a taxidermy piece.
Yeah, and maybe. And what's really odd is how small these legs are.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. The front legs are pretty hardy looking, and the rear legs kind of skinny.
I don't know everything.
I'm being led through part of the museum by a volunteer. So, did you want to give your name?
Corina Gregg.
Corina Gregg. Cool. Yes. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Oh, there's a wedding going on in this little room here.
And this is actually Cameron, Montana.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, if you wanted to spend time, it could take you a couple hours to mm-hmm. be able to, you know, to read everything and so much stuff.
So there's a pantry room, there's a kitchen and household room. All these things are decked out in the appropriate equipment. And boy, if you like antiques, you would mm-hmm. love this place.
So this is kind of one of the favorite little things for us to talk about. So this is a sheriff that we had, Johnny France, which we just laid him to rest uh-huh. last week.
Okay.
Bless his heart. He was a big part of this. But anyways, so I'm told that this is his horse.
Oh.
So these little scuffs on it were his, you know, spurs would
hit uh-huh.
it. But, you know, a lot of people know Johnny as, you know, the notorious Cop the Mountain Men.
Oh.
You know, over in the by the river where the bridge is
uh-huh.
up the I forget what the name of that is, but anyways, he's the one that caught finally one dogged sheriff captured the mountain men, Dan and Don Nichols. Did you ever hear about that?
Are they the ones that kidnap
was it Carrie, what's her name, anyways, that happened up basically up the towards Big Sky.
Yeah. Was she a runner or?
Yes, she was
yeah,
a runner.
Yeah, I remember hearing that.
Captured her for, and they shot the one sheriff wounded him, but.
Wow. So much history all around.
Yes.
Lots of toys in this little room. Is this a still?
I'm not really sure.
I see a lot of copper funnels.
To old whiskey barrel.
Yep.
That's moonshine still. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. And some survey equipment. What is this? Would that wrap up a hose?
Let's see what this is. Electrical wire winder.
Ah, wire, okay.
Used by Montana Power Company in the 1910s.
Mm-hmm. And a collection of rocks and crystals. Enjoy touching and feeling these rocks, so it's hands-on. Very nice. Oh, my. I think that's the biggest piece of obsidian I've ever seen. A little poetry. Oh, and fossils. That's some of my favorites.
So they call this the Smitty Overstreet Room, Mining and Indians.
Yeah. So a bunch of, a collection of points here. Pioneer Education Room.
So here's a couple more pictures that are pretty special to me. So Jack Scully was my principal
uh-huh.
in school. Yes, I loved him. And then Bob Cleverly and Jay Willett were our football coaches. And also taught school as well. They both were my teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I went to school with their kids as well.
Oh, man. Cliff Lake School Bell. Now, the Cliff Lake I know about is kind of down that way.
Down south.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I only know of this. Is it Wade? Cliff mm-hmm. and Wade?
Cliff and Wade, yeah.
Yeah. So was there actually a community out there?
I'm not really sure. Obviously, there must have been some sort.
Hmm. Some of these actually bring back memories of my own going to school. That's how old I am. Whenever I see pictures like this, you know, with the people in them, I'm always wondering what was the story behind that little gathering at the cafe.
Are you on or off?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So these are pictures of our Main Street Ennis now. Uh-huh. Obviously, it doesn't look like
yeah.
that right here. You know, here's this is the 1900s, it says.
Yeah.
And this is the bridge and the Bridgewood, actually the river gorges. And it just, the water freezes from the bottom up, and then this has to go somewhere, so the ice just pushes out, and the water will eventually come out of the banks. It doesn't freeze all the water. You can't freeze
so
a river.
It would, lean over like this
yeah.
from the ice?
They've redone the bridge.
Would it go back, or just then. Stay that way until they repaired it?
Oh, the bridge?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I don't. That's been so long ago. I'm sure they had to repair that. But now the water still will come up. It's a cement bridge going across there.
Mm-hmm.
But the water still will come up, and, you know, the ice will get about that high as well.
Man.
And the ice just stays there until it eventually the river will come back into its banks and go down the river after it starts thawing. And, you know, it has to get, negative 35 somewhere around there for it to start doing that. And when we have a cold snap like that for so long, that's what happens to the water. So then this is our Dock and Olive Losey room, like I was telling you about.
Oh, yeah.
People would come from all over to him to do surgeries. That's the sling and reef operation, I believe is what they would call it. Because Here's a picture here of this. This is Doc Losey and his wife, Olive.
Mm-hmm.
And then this was Rita, his nurse. This is Dr. Hanlos. And this is, Rita. I didn't know. Oh, Joan Getz. And I didn't know the other ones, but I mean, they worked at that hospital for a long time. Mm-hmm. This is August 26th of 1986. And I believe that. Obviously, Doc just died here a couple years ago, but some of them still work there up until a couple years ago. Like Joan.
Man, and this is the actual room that, when it was part of the clinic that he did the surgeries in.
Oh, I don't know about that, but I'm thinking it is.
Maybe at one time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
This room was originally used for exams and dental work.
Hmm. Okay.
Like I said, he has the book out called Doc, and if you read that book, it's it tells about his whole life, how they moved out here, you know, in their Jeep, and they lived on Main Street in Ennis. And so, and then in the one of our other very famous doctors was Dr. Wilkins as well. So, yeah, I've never seen it like that, but pretty phenomenal.
Well, I wonder, was it fish that brought him out here? And had him fall in love with this place?
Oh, I don't know.
I mean, so many
people.
He loved
trains. This is his.
Oh, yeah?
So this actually was in the nursing home when he was in his room. When he was in there. Yeah. At his house. His house is just up the Vardy.
And farm and ranch room. With a mannequin on a mannequin horse, I would call it. Saddle.
Farm and ranch room, it says.
Yep.
Yep.
Hats. And lots of stuff that if I had my reading glasses on, I could probably read a little bit. I got them in my hand, but yeah. Oh, my. And I've seen this before. I mean, I've seen things like this before where it's a whole barbed wire collection.
Mm-hmm.
And This room over here, it looks like a service military room, uniforms. Okay, so now we're in a separate little building that is all about a forge.
And this was Engel Hardware's building.
Okay.
Part of it, you could see a lot of it was new.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like in the different horseshoes and how they would fit on the roof and stuff.
Long, long ago, I saw some documentary about somebody who was, you know, a modern day person that was a horseshoe person. What do you call that?
A farrier.
A farrier, yes, yes. And I thought, oh, that looks like fun. Oh, I'd like to do that.
It's back breaking.
Well, yeah. Then I found out I'm very allergic to horses, so it wouldn't have worked.
No. So this is a big, like, but they cut blocks of ice with that. From like lakes and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
Which I thought was very interesting. I'm not sure where they used that around here, but...
Well, was the Ennis Lake here at that time?
Yeah.
Do you think that from there, maybe?
I don't know what reason they would have to do that, but...
How long ago was it that they built the... Isn't there a dam that creates the lake?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How long ago was that built?
I'm not really sure. Okay. It was there when I was born.
Okay.
It's been at least 56 years.
Yeah. Ooh. And this thing hanging on the ceiling.
It's a hay rake.
Okay. This whole place just talks about somebody's life work, doesn't it?
Right, it does.
Yeah. So we're walking over to the Smitty Overstreet building. Oh, this is the gun collection you're talking about. Oh, Varney Bridge. Did it just get taken out or totally replaced?
It's replaced now, yes.
Okay. So this building has the gun collection in it. How did that come into your hands?
Dave said the family didn't want it, so the kids donated it to the museum. Hmm. And then these are the grizzly bear snaps.
Oh my.
That he was talking about. They're one at the Calgary Expedition, however you say that word, and Stampede for record bulldogging.
It says donated by William C. Bry.
Yeah, which I didn't know him, but then longtime local Helen Wonder, which I knew her, who knew the guy, gave this account of how these shaps came into the possession of the Bry family. He was broke and needed money to continue his rodeoing, so he sold the shaps to Clyde Beals. Clyde built log cabins for William Bry on the H. Lazy Bee Ranch, which is crazy. That's going up Jack Creek in the 1930s. He advanced him the money and took the shaps as payment. For many years, the shaps hung on the wall of the lodge with Clyde, built on the H. Lazy Bee Ranch located at the mouth of the Jack Creek Canyon. And the guy that lives there, yes. He still lives on the T. Lazy Bee. His name's Bob. Wonderful guy.
And was the stuff in the glass cabinet below the gun collection all donated by the same family?
Like I said, I'm not really sure. I just studied. Yeah.
Okay. A lot of really nice bead work. Hey, and there's a piano for sale. Make an offer if you're looking for a piano.
There's a mirror. I don't know how it got down because it's not supposed to be, but I heard somebody took it down.
So we're talking about a Murphy
somebody
bed.
Somebody looking at it, or, yeah, we don't like it.
Yeah.
there's a mirror on the underside of it, which I always was like, why would they put the mirror on the bottom of a bed?
I mean, oh, it's up because on the wall when normally it'd be up. And...
Well, I know, but think about it. You got to think a little about that.
Okay.
You know, you're jumping on the bed. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. I see. Yeah.
Like, oh, could you put it on the side or something? Ronnie, here. I don't know.
Oh, wow.
Oh, goodness.
And a spinning wheel. Oh, man. There's a lot of furniture in this room.
That actually was...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, wow. A saddle with a velvet? Is that velvet or a blanket seat?
It's just a blanket seat, so this
it's
is
really
a side saddle.
Pretty. Side saddle, yeah.
This is actually from the 1880s to the 1890s.
Pretty fancy looking.
Mm-hmm.
And there's old ice skates in here and skis, and is that a contraption for a bed? This, the piece is leaning up against the wall? No. No, there's, I don't know, maybe it's an adjustable bed frame?
Without me, I have no idea.
Yeah. So much mystery. Thanks to Karina for her guidance through the museum. Looking at the beast, I wonder if it's a hybrid of a wolf and a thylacine that maybe escaped from a circus. Thylacines, or Tasmanian tigers, were declared extinct from their native Tasmania in 1980, but the last living one died in a zoo in 1936, so they say. But there are plenty of reports of sightings, so who knows? CBS covered it in a couple stories in 2024. Well, anyway, I'll be returning with a family group that's coming to visit soon. We'll see what they think. The Madison River Valley is sure a beautiful place, and the museum houses all sorts of artifacts that tell its history. By the way, if you or someone you know would like to be a volunteer at the museum, please contact the place. You can contact the Madison Valley History Association Museum in Ennis, Montana at 406-682-4685. And for more information or off-season, call 406-682-5780 or 406-682-7415. And if you're going to do that, do it quick for this year because I think they close in the middle of September for the season. And thank you to the Madison Valley History Museum in Ennis, Montana, for a delightful and educational visit. My thanks to Ken Lane for his work on Desert Oracle Radio, and to the good folks at KGBM who make space for this show. Thank you, Gallatin Valley, and everyone for listening. Sounds today came from the Missouri Headwaters State Park. I would love to hear from you, so please call and leave me a message or text about anything on your mind. The number is 406-404-6246. And Google's going to shut down that number if I don't get some calls. Well, you can hear this program live on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgbm.org at 7 p.m. Sunday and 9 a.m. Monday. And our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgbm.org website. I'll be back next week with more desert and mountain lore for you. Till then, stay well and sweet dreams. And I'm going to close with this thought. I keep thinking of that beast and maybe its lonely parent, a thylacine far from its home, finding a new love and a native wolf of Montana back in the late 1800s. So here's to you, thylacine ancestors. May you find love in the great beyond. Oh, I know that full moon was last Tuesday, but I'm still so aware of it. So we're going to have Billie Holiday take us out with Blue Moon.
Blue Moon, you saw me standing alone without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own. Blue Moon, you knew just what I was there for. You heard me saying a prayer for someone I really could care for. And then there suddenly appeared before me the only one my arms will ever hold. I heard somebody whisper, please adore me. And when I looked, the moon had turned to gold. Blue moon, now I'm no longer alone, without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own. Whisper, please adore me. And I looked, the moon had turned to gold. Blue moon, now I'm no longer alone, without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own.